We all have a story. The events in our life and the environments we spend time in have a profound effect on who we will become in this one life that we have. Even when something doesn't seem to affect us consciously, it often does have an effect on your subconscious and can influence your decisions and especially influence the art you might create. Each episode I do of this show, I try and uncover what it is about each guest's journey that makes their art what it is. Today's guest wanted to push back on this idea a bit, but in doing so revealed to me just exactly what makes his art what we see today. For me, this proves even more so how impactful the subconscious can be on the art we make. I'm your host, Jacob Johnson. This is the My Art Is Real podcast, a narrative journey into the lives that shape art. Today's episode, Christopher Delamar. Right after the break. This episode is brought to you by My Art Is Real. If you enjoy this podcast, share it with all your friends. If you want to take the support a step further, consider signing up to our Patreon page at patreon.com/MyArtIsReal or purchase a print on our website, MyArtIsReal.com. It's that time of the year again, and we are media partners for the Beautiful Bazaar Art Prize. By submitting to the contest, you will have the chance to win prize money and so much more. Head on over to beautifulbazaarartprize.art. For all the information, the submissions will close on July 17th, 2024. Okay, back to the episode.
My full name is Christopher Hugh Delamotte. I'm a painter, figurative painter, working out of Sydney, Australia. I mean, that's kind of it. Like, I like to sort of, as a title, yeah, figurative painter seems to do it. I like to paint things that that look like things more than things that don't, I guess, is the distinction. But that's it.
Could you tell me a little bit more about where you grew up?
I grew up in the city, and then around like the start of high school, I moved a couple of hours north to the sunny Central Coast, and I went to high school up there, which was a bit of a change for me. But like, I was at a good age, so I was kind of just like, I was like this little chubby Sydney city kid. And then I just sort of woke up one morning, I was living on the beach, so I acclimatized that pretty quick, which was cool. But my older sister was a bit older than me, and we sort of moved when she was like in the middle of high school, so it was a bit harder for her. But no, it was gravy train for me
growing up there and running around with your friends. What sort of stuff did you get into?
Man, when I was little, I was like obsessed with cricket. That was my thing, like lived and dreamed and breathed cricket. So that was sort of like my dream when I was young. All I did was play cricket. And then I moved away, and then like I was on the beach, so I got into surfing and stuff like that. In high school, I kind of lost my like drive for cricket, even though it was like my real thing. So like I drank too much and got into a bunch of bad stuff. So I guess I lost the drive to play cricket, but I also just sort of destroyed my body a bit, so I couldn't really keep doing it.
While growing up, art was always sort of there in Christopher's life. His dad was an architect and would impart some of his skills and knowledge onto a young Christopher.
I guess art was kind of like always there by proxy. So like my dad was an architect. So from a young age, I was always interested in drawing. And so he taught me sort of how to draw like proportion and perspective and stuff from when I was pretty young. Like I'd just sit there drawing like faces and things like that forever, and bodies. And then
for him, it wasn't art though. It was just drawing to pass the time. One thing me and Christopher quickly bonded over was our love for drawing Dragon Ball Z characters when we were children. If you don't know, Dragon Ball Z is a very famous anime series about these sort of human-like aliens with superpowers. I know that's a crude way to explain it, but it's basically what it is. Well, they always had these very dramatic, spiky hairstyles, and that's what made it so fun to draw them, because you could do their hair very easily and look pretty freaking cool. Because of the skills he had learned from his dad so early on in life, he always felt like he was pretty good at drawing and didn't really care to try to get better.
I always knew I was good at it, let's say, but I never like, it wasn't a passion. Even through high school, like I did art in high school and stuff, but I always had this, like, I don't know what it was, like, I thought, like, ah, like, I'm already good at this, I don't need to learn anything, like, I think I'm too good for everything, blah blah blah. And I guess I was a bit of a dick in high school as well, so what's the best way to put it, like, didn't see any point in pursuing it. I thought it was something that I'd already, like, done, I guess. The irony in that as well is that in my high school year group, like my class, there's a guy called Jordan Richardson. He's pursued art as well. I obviously did it a bit later, but, like, he's one of the best oil painters, you know, possibly in the country. I think so. And it's funny because people be like, oh, you know, you, like, your art's great, like, blah, 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 or whatever. And it's like, in my head, I'm like, I'm not even the best painter in my high school year class. So, like, so yeah, me thinking that I was really good and great at it without pursuing it was just ridiculous.
How many times have you or someone you know said, oh, that's art, I could do that easily? I don't know what it is, but people just seem to get this overconfidence in themselves from time to time and think they could just make any art, that it's all easy. And that's definitely not the case. But growing up, did anyone consider you the art kid, you think? You know, there always seems to be that one kid that's labeled as the art kid in school.
When I was young, I just loved, like, Dragon Ball Z and stuff. So when I was in primary school and, like, they were like, oh, that's the kid that can draw Dragon Ball Z and shit like that. And, like, yeah, I'd always do, like, I drew, like, designs and things on people's surfboards and, like, I'd do stuff like that. But, like, I wasn't really sort of known as, like, the art kid, nah.
Throughout high school, Christopher didn't really care what was going on. All he wanted to do was party and have fun.
Throughout high school, all I wanted to do was, like, you know, just hang out and party and stuff like that, and I chase girls and stuff. And then, you know, after that, I was like, you know, obviously I was doing a lot of drugs and stuff like that, and I was just headed down a path where I didn't have any prospects, really. I graduated from high school, but I had a really low mark. Oh, I think, what's it, a GPA in the US? So my GPA was, like, really low, and, like, I never, like, did any, like, a trade or anything to make money.
He had just always assumed that life would work itself out.
Throughout high school, I had this, like, romantic idea in my head that, you know, I was just going to sort it all out and quickly cram for all these exams and get a good GPA and just become an architect like my dad. So I never really even thought about it. I was just like, you know, it'll all work itself out. But, you know, then the weekend would come around and all the other stuff, and then I wouldn't do anything. So in my head, when I left high school, I just didn't really think about the future. I was just more interested in, like, how I was going to have fun. You know, I wasn't, like, really well off or anything like that. So, like, I was kind of just scraping by doing whatever I could. Like, that's when I sort of realized, I was like, oh, okay, I've got to do something. Like, I can't just sit around here and, like, just keep doing nothing, you know?
It's so easy to get trapped in a loop of what seems to be the easiest thing to do in that moment, but you don't want to wake up 10, 15, 20 years in the future regretting all of your decisions and wishing you have done more. Luckily for Christopher, he had this realization only a couple of years out of school. How are you feeling at this time, just when you were just partying and doing drugs and not really having a care in the world?
Outwardly, I was like happy as Larry, and no one would have known. But inside, I was like, yeah, I had like pretty severe anxiety, and I was like in a pretty bad way. But, you know, I'd never let that on to anyone. Like, you know, I was just ready to have fun and, you know, go party or do whatever it was, you know, whatever was the next fun thing to do that day. But yeah, inside, yeah, I wasn't feeling good at all. I was like, but I mean, when you're sort of in a rut like that and you're sort of, you know, I was pretty severely addicted to certain drugs and stuff. The mindset's like, oh, I'll just deal with it later. Oh, I know this is stupid, but I'll figure it out.
And what was that moment where you finally said to yourself, enough of this, I need to get a plan together, I need to get my life together?
I can actually remember the day. It was like a year after school or something, and I was at my mate's place, and he had this mad house, and it was like a nice beach suburb, and his mum had, like, given him the whole bottom floor of this place. So we were just like you know, like the Lost Boys in Peter Pan, just doing whatever we wanted and stuff. And yeah, I was sitting underneath his, he had this like little mad little shoddy pool table. And I was sitting underneath there at like, I don't know, like 2 a.m, like just high. And I was like, yeah, man, I've got to do something. I've got to go and make something of myself. I even in that moment thought about it and I was like, what am I good at? Like, I'm good at drawing. I'm good at painting. Like, I wasn't good at painting then. I hadn't even painted at all. And I was like, I'm going to go and pursue that. So, like a week later, I just made a couple of calls and a friend of mine had like a job and I just moved back down to the city. And I was like, you know, I just got to go and sort my life out, really. I'm just in a bit of a rut.
Once he got back to the big city, life was still a struggle at times. But hey, he was young. That's what life is for most young people. I remember frequently a few years ago, I would go into my car and grab whatever change I could find and go to this fast food place called Cookout. And I'd get a tray of food that they would sell for like $6. And while it's not the best food for you, it did taste pretty good and it was really cheap. And so while I didn't have a lot of money back then, I was still very happy and doing my best to try and make it in this world. What sort of jobs did you do during this time? What sort of jobs were you doing?
When I moved down to the city initially, I got a job in this like in a cafe with my friend. And then I was just kind of doing like odd jobs before I started going to art school. So I was like, I did landscaping and like, yeah, this one time I did this landscaping job and I just put it out on like a job application thing. And this guy hired me and he thought I was a landscaper, but I wasn't. I just said like landscaper's laborer. And he was like, yeah, we have to do this like whole garden. My sister's about to sell her house. And I just went with it and I just made out that I knew what I was talking about and just redid this guy's whole garden for him. And he was like, yeah, man, cool.
I'm going to be brutally honest for a second. I'll let you all know that this was the exact same way that I got into curation. I always had loved to share art and I've been doing some work with artists. And one day I found out what curation was. I found out that, you know, curators, they didn't have to be the gallery. They didn't have to be the artist, but they could bring the two together and put together a unique show. I was like, well, I could do that. And so I did my best to find the gallery that would let me. I was spending every day trying to, you know, help galleries promote their artists and stuff until one day it worked out. In reality, I was so nervous because I really had no knowledge of what I was going to do or what I was supposed to be doing and just did everything the best I could and tried to follow my gut. Luckily, it all worked out great. And I still can't thank Ben Krause enough for giving me that opportunity to do that first art show. Thanks so much, Ben. So Chris is back in the city working on jobs and got into college to start working on his art degree. At this time, he also landed a job in a bar, and while it was fun and gave him some great life experiences, it also wasn't the best environment.
When I started going to art school, I got a job in a bar, and I met like one of my best friends, and he was going to art school as well. And we found this warehouse apartment, and it was in a pretty like notorious building in Sydney. It's right in the city, and it's got the sort of, it's a semi-abandoned building basically, but somehow people have like done it up well enough, especially in the bottom floors where we were living and renting it out. And so it was kind of like a playground for us as like young art students and stuff, but there was like a lot of drugs and stuff in there.
Now at the bar and in the loft, it became very easy for Chris to fall back into that party lifestyle. But luckily, he was able to keep his head above water with the help of his fiance and his passion to make art.
Again, like I don't want to make it sound like I was, you know, some like I know a lot of people with really serious like addictions and things like that. And I wasn't, I don't want that to be like the defining thing that defined me or anything, because I wasn't as bad as a lot of people I know. And it gets really sad and bad with some people. But for me, yeah, I was going down a pretty bad path again. And around that time, I had that same sort of thing, like, this isn't going well. Like I need to sort of get out of this rut again. I'm going down a pretty bad path. And so actually around that time, I met my now fiance we've been together for like 8 years, and that sort of coincided a lot. And she really helped me and was good. But that coincided. I sort of moved in and we got a place together, and I kind of got out of that whole like scene I was in. And again, yeah, art was like my going to art school. I'd started painting and I was really putting myself into that. And then, yeah, once I'd sort of got myself out of that rut, it was just like, okay, art's my outlet now.
Quickly, art became something he couldn't live without. An addiction, but a much healthier one.
Yeah, since going to art school, I really don't feel like I'm doing something unless I'm painting. Like if I don't paint for a couple of weeks or something, I start getting, I just start not feeling right. I guess it's like a form of anxiety or something. I'm like, I have to go do something. I just don't feel like I'm living.
So you're in art school now. Tell me what that experience was like for you.
Art school was interesting because a lot of people go to art school like straight out of school. So I think I was about 20 or 21. And art school was interesting because when I thought about art school, I thought, you know, it'd just be people like sitting around painting and it'd all be about the art and stuff. But art school's a lot about like people socializing and stuff. And so like I guess it attracts a lot of people who aren't really, let's say, like socializing in high school, and they're not sort of, they're like kind of outcasts in a sense. When I was in art school, it was a different environment for me because I was like, oh, okay, like, you know, this is like high school for a lot of people, you know, like everyone's like making friends and like going out and hanging out with each other and stuff. And for the first little while, I was a bit sort of turned off because I was like, you know, like when are we all going to start like sit around and talk about art and like make art? You know, you guys just seem to want to like go to the pub and drink and stuff. But art school was great because you see, I guess I didn't realize that there was people out there who really art was really serious. You know, like you had those. I had some great lecturers and great professors and stuff, and it was cool to be exposed to people like really talking and thinking seriously about art. You know, like because I'd never really taken it that seriously in my life, and then you know, you see that this stuff really matters, and I think that was one of the things about art school that I was like, oh, okay, this is in some sense it's important.
Originally, the idea was to be a printmaker, but Chris got dissatisfied with that process pretty quickly.
Like I was saying, I kind of went to art school with the intention of being a printmaker, and so I got into printmaking, and I was like, I don't really like this much. And I didn't start painting until maybe my second year of art school, and I was like, what I started off doing was like ink drawings. My whole portfolio before art school is just ink drawings and line drawings and stuff. And then printmaking, I got pretty like, I just got a little bit turned off by printmaking. It was like the process annoyed me and like I wasn't getting what I wanted out of it. Like I was too impatient with it basically. And so then I was like, okay, look, I'm going to try paint. And then I think I just did one portrait, like a big head, someone's face. And I was like, okay, yeah, I know how to do this now. Because I never really tried to mix colors. I never really tried to do any of that. And when I saw that I could make it work, you know, like good enough for me at that stage, I was like, okay, yeah, I'm a painter now.
Now that you were painting, what kind of stuff were you making?
And so I just started painting like faces, like big floating faces. And I saw the work of Chuck Close and I was like, wow, I think I went and saw an exhibition of his at one of the galleries in Sydney. And I was like, you know, wow, this is incredible. But I saw one of his exhibitions and I was like, oh, okay, this is like the best thing ever. So a lot of my early paintings were like me sort of reaching and trying to paint like Chuck Close after his accident. So like the sort of half abstract looking things that were just like really clear faces from a long way away. And then from there, I got to a pretty good degree of not photoreal painting, but like good degree of like portrait painting. Just with acrylics and like flat application. And then I went into this like sort of glitch mode and I was like, okay, how can I mess with these? So I started doing paintings where they sort of bent and stretched, and like I'd paint a streetscape and all the buildings were wobbly and stuff like that. So yeah, glitch, that sort of whole glitch art movement for me was like, oh, this is great, because I don't even have to paint something that looks like someone's face. I can just paint, you know, a face that's all mangled and it still looks like a painting.
Mixing the portrait faces and the glitchy art, Chris started to find his early style, and at that same moment had the realization that he was an actual painter and a real artist.
And I remember the first time I did one, it was just this warped picture of this girl's face. And I looked at it and I was like, oh, right, I'm a painter. Like, I can paint. And I remember I sent a photo of it to my dad and I was like, look at this. And he was like, well, like, what's that? And I was like, it's a painting. Like, I'm a painter now. And I really remember looking at that painting for a long time and I was like, okay, you can paint. Like, you now keep going with this. Like, you found what you're good at in the art world, not sculpture or printmaking or something like that.
Chris had finally found his calling, his purpose in this world, which doing that in and of itself can take years or decades to finally discover. But as we all know from all of these artist stories, is that the journey does not end there. There's still a long trail to take to reach that destination of a full-time artist. So you graduated college. What's the plan to get the art out in the world?
Yeah, so always, I guess, in the back of my mind, I was like, you know, you have to pursue painting. But I don't know. I had it in my head, like a lot of people were like rushing out and doing a lot of group shows and like little galleries and stuff. And I sort of thought, I don't want to rush into that. Like, I'm happy to wait. I want to wait till it's right and it's like a gallery that I like or whatever the case. And actually, I mean, your page, and there was this kind of like golden era around that time of your page and a couple of others had sort of shared my work on Instagram, and that gave me a little bit of a following. And so I wasn't in a rush to like go out and exhibit, but I did need to go and make some sort of living, because I wasn't making very good money working like 3 days a week at a bar and selling a painting maybe once I don't know, every 3 months or something.
That golden era of Instagram was so great. It was around 2016. The algorithm seemed to be perfect at the time, always showing you exactly what you wanted to see and actually showing you the people you followed. It was during that time that My Art Is Real grew pretty fast and became the page you all know. But nothing perfect lasts forever, and as they slowly ruined the algorithm and the app, I turned my focus onto this podcast. Now I'm not just sharing the works of Christopher and all these other artists, but I'm trying to bring their stories to the world to hear and be inspired by. While he was growing online, Chris still needed to make a living.
So, yeah, after I left art school, I got a job as a bellboy. So a friend of ours was running a department, the bell department at the Park Hyatt down at the Rocks in Sydney. And so, yeah, like super swanky hotel. And I ended up just being a bellboy for the best part of 3 years down there. And I ended up sort of managing all of the bellboys and parking all these luxurious cars and stuff. And like all the A-list celebrities would stay there. And like, I mean, that was fun. Like, yeah, especially being young, like it was awesome. So yeah, I did a couple of weird sort of like not weird jobs, but a bit of a mixed bag of jobs between then. And then COVID happened and I was, I kind of left the hotel. I started working as a spray painter. A friend of mine was working as a fabricator for this company and they needed a spray painter. And I was like, okay, I didn't know how to spray paint really. Like I'd only ever used sort of cans and things like that when I was younger, but not very much. And I was like, okay, yeah, let's go. So I learned how to do like industrial spray painting in about a month. And I was doing that for a while, which was really cool as well. And then I was meeting with my mate for a drink and he was like, he's working for a software company. It was a startup then and now it's a scale up. And then, I'm working there still. And it's a good job.
But it was in between all of these jobs that he never stopped painting.
In between all that, I was still just painting. Like I'm painting a little bit more now, but yeah, like every other day, I guess I was painting at night. my missus and me had this like small little apartment. So I'd just paint in the kitchen. It was basically a one bedroom place. So yeah, we had tiles and I'd just paint big canvases in our kitchen when she wasn't home. And like, so yeah, I was still always just painting away, but I didn't like even my girlfriend, well, my fiance, sorry. other people would be like, you know, you got to like put yourself out there. You got to paint, you got to do this. But I really didn't want to rush. Like I just was like, you know, when the time's right, it'll happen. I wasn't starving or anything. And I wanted to, and I think I guess every artist to a sense, they kind of think, oh, you know, my work's not good enough, or I need to paint a little bit more. I didn't necessarily think that. Like I thought my paintings were good, but I wanted to make sure I was being shown or in a place that I would want to go to, let's say.
Finally, that right space became available for Chris to present his works in person.
The middle of last year, a good friend of mine, he's sort of in the art world, and he came over and met me, and we went to an opening of a gallery in Sydney, and he introduced me to the directors. They were like, yeah, you can have a little solo show in sort of like our project space. That was last year. Yeah, I was like, all right, yeah, this is it. I like, this is a good gallery. I really like the guys. Like, this is sort of like go time. And then since then, I've just been really just painting as much as I can. And I mean, yeah, I mean, like any artist, just trying to make them as good as I can.
And how did it feel for you getting to do that exhibition?
Again, I guess like sort of goes back to me sort of sitting around when I was younger, like I've got to go and do something like that. That felt for me like, okay, like this is what sort of achieving something feels like again. And now I'm just like chasing that even harder. So that was, yeah, it felt good. You know, like I went to art school, and like I think anyone who would go to art school and they finally get like a show or something like that, it's like, okay, I didn't just do all that for nothing. And like I think it, like there's a lot of great artists out there who maybe don't get the chance to exhibit, and that doesn't say anything about how good their art is at all. Like it's not, I think it always is in the back of, you know, people's head when they're creating art, like, oh, I want it to be shown. I want to be successful. I want to be seen in galleries and things. So yeah, it felt good. And you know, I want to keep showing them, that's for sure.
No guest I've had on this podcast is at their journey's end. I've had guests on who have completely switched styles since being on the episode. And I mean, that's what you hope for. Artists are always evolving. People are always growing. Christopher has reached a great moment in his career as he starts to expand where he presents his paintings to the audience. And with that comes whole new concerns and even more understanding of his own art. Like I said at the start of this episode, an artist's past experiences have an effect on their style they one day will make. And trust me, if you go look at Christopher's work right now, after listening to his story thus far, you'll start to pick up on various influences, I'm pretty sure. From here, the conversation takes a new turn into Christopher exploring what it is his works even mean, and with that, revealing what truly matters to him when he creates a piece.
If I can maybe just take the conversation in a different, like, route for a minute. Like, I just... like this is all great, and like I think like this the way that sort of artists get to where they are is like is important and it's interesting, but I think it's only kind of in retrospect that it becomes important. Like once you like the person's art, it's like to me, I wouldn't be interested in an artwork based on, you know, what the artist is trying to say or where the artist has come from or anything like that. For me, it's like how good it is. Thinking about like the interpretation of art or how good it is or bad it is, the artist to me isn't as that important. I'm just interested in the art. And then if I like the art, then I'd be like, oh, okay, I wonder who this person is really. I think what you were saying though is right though. It's like the more you sort of know about a person, maybe the more their art makes sense after you like it. I don't know. It's an interesting thing.
I think knowing the artist's past and influences can greatly broaden your understanding of the art that they make. But when you critique any form of art, you will inevitably bring in some of your own ideas and experiences into your observation of the work. So, as an artist could have their own message in mind, the message can connect to you in a very different way.
Again, I think there's like a lot of emphasis on like what the artist wants to say or whatever. And to me, like, you know, it's irrelevant for me, like what the artist is trying to say. Like, it's all there in the work. And if I like it, I like it. My paintings, I've had, when you're a figurative painter, obviously it's pretty hard to sort of get away from interpretation. Like, what does this mean or whatever? Because it is sort of figures there and people or something. But I've had interpretations of my own work where I'm like, oh, this means this, or I did this painting of Bacchus pissing on Prometheus. And I was like, oh, you know, this is just, you know, young, like drunk people who don't care and they don't like have respect for the past who built all this. And a friend of mine came around and he just started laughing at it. And he was like, oh, like sucked in Prometheus. That's what you get, the scorn of the gods. And like, I love that interpretation so much more that that's my interpretation of the painting now. I'm not sure the artist has a sort of a privileged interpretation of things. I mean, for me, an artist just makes art as best they can. And like, if you ask any more of that, you're asking too much, I think. And if you're not asking them to do that, you're asking nothing of them. So like, I just, for me, interpretation's a fickle one. It's a weird one. In a massive way, like my paintings are like, they're definitely influenced by like graphic novels and things like that, even implicitly. Like, I'm not really trying to make them look like cartoons, but I just like the look of that sort of hard line graphic stuff. So like, I can't really get away from it.
With Christopher's next statement, he sort of drives my point home. For him, his journey has led him to art school and then led him to falling in love with painting. His works are an exact representation of that love and appreciation for the craft of painting.
All of my paintings are referencing painting. Like, you know, it's not like at the moment I'm doing sort of contemporary scenes, but it's all connected to like art history and painting and mythology and stuff. It's all of the ideas are sort of imported from stuff that I'm interested in. It's not like anything to do with at least not consciously about my own journey or something. Yeah, it's like, you know, immerse yourself. Like, as a painter, you don't want to just paint. You want to know everything about painting. You want to know, you know, who's the best. Who am I talking to, I guess, in a sense, when I'm painting. It's like if you're gonna go for it, like, go whole hog.
Your works now have a lot of just these bright greens in the place of characters. Could you explain a little more of where that comes from?
Right. So this is where, like, I guess the subject matter and the content sort of comes into focus, like against each other. So like, what I was doing for like most of last year was I had this idea, like taking sort of Baroque figures and then suspending them kind of in like a vacuous sort of non-space. You know, I've read a lot of like formalist critics, and especially like Greenberg and Michael Fried and stuff. And I was like, you know, their sort of chant line is like, you look at art as if it's in a vacuum and there's no external like socio-political whatever things. It's just painting is painting and that's how it should be judged, sort of thing. So I just took that idea of like this vacuous space and then wanted to sort of suspend figures in there. In art school, I was taught by my professor, when I was painting those big heads, he was like, you can't just have heads floating there. Like, they have to be grounded. Like, it's just like, they look okay, but what is it? And I was like, okay, yeah. So from that point on, everything's grounded. And I was like, okay, so how do I ground these sort of floating figures? And I was like, oh, I'll just put a shadow on the ground. And then it kind of hit me. I was like, what if the shadow was fluoro? And I don't know why I thought that or whatever. So I'm going to put this sort of fluoro disc there instead of a shadow. And then it sort of brings together this sort of Baroque imagery straight in from that sort of modernist critique. And then it's like, boom, there's that fluoro disc there, which is like modernist contemporaneity or whatever. After that, I was like, oh, wait, hold on. Why don't I just paint the figures in that fluoro color? And so like the sort of Baroque and like Renaissance color schemes, the Baroque is sort of putting all three primary colors in there where the Renaissance painters would. And I'm like, this sort of fluoro pink or this fluoro green. It just sits nicely with all three primary colors.
And before he even knew it, the green started to have a meaning.
The green just kept going, and I was like, okay, now the green's starting to mean something to me as like subject matter. I got to the place now with all these green figures where I'm like, you know, what do people look like now? Like throughout art history, you know, like the way that people are depicted is constantly changing. You know, with the advent of photography and stuff, like we can't get a more clear image of what a person looks like, but in a sort of more abstract sense, what do people look like today? And then it got me sort of thinking about, you know, identity and stuff. And so for me, the green is like, of course, it's that like cyber color. It's sort of at once this sort of excess of color, but at the same time, it's this kind of void of like nothingness. While I got there through like painting, and I still think the green just looks excellent against certain colors, like I really do, otherwise I wouldn't paint it. Yeah, I guess the subject matter that I think, you know, what do people look like today? Because it's really hard to sort of categorize anyone, but at the same time, you want to. So it was really interesting. And that's why I sort of called my upcoming show, I just have a quick plug, Idolatry, because I was like, you know, it's like the idolatry of identity. And so I've put together this sort of body of paintings of more contemporary scenes, but all of the people are kind of just that green color. So yeah, I just think there's something really contemporary about that color.
And do you feel like you're still evolving and growing within your work?
I feel like the next painting I do and the next painting I do, they're all sort of, I mean, in my head, they're getting better. And if they weren't, I'd feel like there's something wrong. Yeah, I guess I feel like they're still getting better. And I wouldn't want to get to a place where I'm just doing it for the sake of it, let's say.
And what is one of your goals with art?
I think what I'm trying to get out of my painting, and I think any good painting, is when you see it in the flesh, it kind of jumps off the wall at you. Like that's what you're going for. I think McLuhan had a really good analogy of what an artist does, and that an artist is just setting traps for your attention. Like no matter what sort of art they're doing, like it's just trapping your attention and holding your attention for as long as they can. And I really think without seeing the physical object, you don't get that as much. I mean, you can still get it. I've definitely scrolled past paintings before online and I'm like, wow, you know, how did they do that? How did they do this? But yeah, standing there in like the presence of a good piece of art, it's like, you know, you could sit there for, it's kind of timeless. You kind of just, you don't have to think, you don't have to do anything. You can just sit there and appreciate it.
Christopher's style is a result of what happens when you spend many years studying and experimenting with different styles and concepts. You can't sit around your desk or your canvas all day and expect your next big idea to just pop out of your brain at any moment. Go live life. Go read, go watch movies, go soak up as much as you can, and try to always improve, and eventually you will find that style that works for you. Thanks for listening to another episode of the Miter Show podcast. We have come so far in the year and a half since starting the podcast, and I can't thank each of you who listened enough. If you enjoy this show, like always, tell all your friends and family about it until they finally listen. And if you would like to take your support for the podcast a bit further, consider buying some prints on our website, mitershow.com, or getting a couple new prints in the coming weeks, or sign up to our Patreon page at patreon.com/mitershow. Thank you, and I will see you in the next episode.